is a Boardwalk Audio podcast.
Duck Snort.
Hello and welcome to Duck Snort Baseball Podcast.
Duck Snort.
Duck Snort.
I'm Greg Nix. I'm sitting here with Waylon McQueen.
I'm Waylon. Hello.
And Joe Weber on the ones and twos.
Hey there.
We got an exciting show for today.
Yeah.
We have the former Kansas City Royals Jumbotron operator and, I guess, in-game director, Jeff Johnson, coming up.
He decides what's on the Kiss cam. He decides what's on the rain delay cams.
Yeah, basically anything that you see on a scoreboard. And it was very interesting to talk to. So that'll be up in just a little bit. After that, we have Mitch Huckweed, a busker outside of the Seattle Mariners stadium. I don't know where we find these guys.
Safeco Field. He sent an email. He ranted about something about Tuba Man. You know Tuba Man, the Seattle Tuba Man?
Heard of.
I've heard of him. I don't know. It just seemed like I'm in charge of booking. Sometimes it's pretty late at night, and maybe I should vet them a little bit.
Did you book this guy after that 11-inning Angels game that we went to earlier this week?
I did,
Is that why?
that long Angels game.
Well, you should have been tipped off because it said the email was sent from like a Seattle Public Library. So this guy doesn't even have a computer, it seems like.
Does it say that at the bottom of emails?
Yeah.
Like sent stamp, from my iPhone?
It's yeah, sent, sent from Seattle Public Library.
Seattle Public Library. So I don't know. He's a busker. He said he was driving down here in his van anyway, and so I said, let's put him on.
Well, I'm glad. I like a little crazy.
Yeah.
I like to mix it up with a little crazy.
I'm excited.
Yeah. I'm a little bit
loco
myself.
Those buskers are fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you just mentioned we went to an Angels game. I think it's necessary we bring up when the Duck Snort boys go on a little adventure to
have an outing.
Yeah. It was, I'm saying Angels game. You heard me. I said oops because it got loud. We went to an Angels game, but it was for Greg to see the White Sox.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Yeah. I like the idea of you guys like rolling your eyes and being like, oh, fuck. Greg has to see the White Sox. He can't do it alone.
It was fun. It was a fun field trip.
It was a very fun game. It really was probably one of the most fun games I've been to. A lot of ups and downs.
My favorite part was the rally monkey.
Oh.
And the clips, if you've never been to an Angels game, they have a rally monkey that comes up whenever the Angels need to rally and score. And they splice him into classic movies like
Ferris
Bueller.
Why do they
and
do
Home
that?
Alone? But they played Disturbs.
Yeah.
That Disturbs song over it.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Really weird. Really feels like the Angels are looking for an identity and landed on one that doesn't make sense to anyone.
Landed on one 15 years ago and haven't changed it.
Yeah, they're like trying to change it because I don't think he was originally in these movies. Like originally it was just like they played this monkey one time during the 2001 season when the Angels ended up winning the World Series. They came back during that game. They started playing it every game. They won the World Series. It's their thing now. But I don't know where the Ferris Bueller's Day Off thing comes from.
No,
what was the other movie that they
Home
played?
Alone. It was Home Alone.
Home Alone.
And
right?
There was a Will Ferrell movie.
Oh,
Wedding
no,
Crashers.
It wasn't Home Alone.
Yeah,
it was Wedding Crashers.
Yeah.
So I made up that it was Home Alone. Yeah, it was very
weird. But fun game. Beautiful stadium.
Game.
We got cool bobbleheads.
Mike Trout.
We saw Mike Trout.
You got to see Mike Trout.
Best and it was kind of disappointing on his end, though. Like they walked him twice. Yeah. He struck out twice.
Yeah.
I will say I did, as a White Sox fan, watching this game, and it was a close game. It was back and forth. White Sox came back in the ninth inning, sent the game to extra innings. I got nervous every single time Mike Trout came to the plate.
I was waiting for a spicy ding-dong.
didn't give us no
Never
spicy
got
ding-dongs.
A spicy ding-dong. But
it was a blast.
The funny thing about that game is I had a friend. I told him I was going to the game, and he was like, awesome, you get to see Mike Trout. It's Evan. I'll just say Evan. We bring him up like every single day in the podcast.
I feel like Evan is like our Wilson from Home Improvement. It's like you never see his face, but he's just always around.
But it's you guys and Evan are the three people I talk to baseball with about the most. But he was like, what are the pitching matchups? And instantly texted, never mind, it's the Angels and White Sox, which is very funny because it was Derek Holland and
J.C. Ramirez or something like that? Yeah, definitely one pitcher who's past his prime and a pitcher who I've never heard of before. And I know a lot of players in the major leagues.
I never heard of J.C. Ramirez. But that got me, my wife was there when that happened, and it got us talking, probably more me talking, about how crazy it was in the 90s, in the late 90s. Like in 1999, Roger Clemens, Randy Johnson, and Greg Maddux were all still in their primes, right? In 1999?
Yeah,
definitely.
For sure.
Three of the top, maybe five, definitely 10 pitchers of all time. And then Pedro having the Pedro years, his peak. And then you also had like Smoltz and Glavine. It was like an amazing time.
Kurt Schilling.
Yeah, that, I didn't even think. Mike Mussina.
Mm-hmm.
And so these pitchers that are all like the best pitchers, probably because a lot of them were on steroids, but the best pitchers. And then my wife was like, yeah, so like, what about today? What's the equivalent of these like Hall of Fame, like apex pitchers? And I was like, Clayton Kershaw. I was like Clayton Kershaw and maybe Madison Bumgarner.
Yeah, it's interesting that, I mean, I wouldn't put Madison Bumgarner second. I would put Chris Sale or Justin Verlander second, probably.
Verlander or Felix Hernandez, but he's on like the end, like having all those players play at the same time. We were very spoiled.
Yeah, weird also coinciding.
David Price, maybe?
Right now. Well, the interesting thing about that, I think, that they were all pitching at the same time, especially is because that was such an offensive-heavy era.
Yeah.
Like, that is what the late 90s are known for, is, like, the home run binge and, like, Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. And we're in a much friendlier environment to pitchers right now in baseball. Like, ERAs are a lot... It's come up a little bit the last couple of years, but they're much lower than they were.
Strikeouts are way
then,
up.
For sure. Yeah. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, we don't have as many, certainly, like, first ballot, like, inner circle Hall of Fame guys playing right now. I think if I'm going, like, Hall of Fame, like, Kershaw is the only one that I'm, like, 100% confident in.
Yeah.
I think Verlander and Sale are pretty safe bets.
Hernandez, I think, is probably, it's got to be close.
Yeah,
King
probably.
Felix is who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And then that's kind of, for active pitchers, that's kind of it, right?
Yeah, Sabathia? I mean, Bumgarner, Sabathia. Yeah, it's, I wonder what it is. I don't know. Do you have any theories?
I mean, we know Clemens was steroids. But I mean, like Maddux definitely wasn't. I have a hard time believing Johnson was. Schilling probably was. I don't know. Maybe he wasn't.
Randy Johnson was a freak.
Yeah.
Like some
he's
of those
like,
guys
like Chris
are
Sale.
Yeah, some of those guys are just freaks.
Yeah.
But like there's so many talented young guys in the God, I sound fucking old. I sound like I'm a like 70-year-old ex-player. Like a lot of talented young boys out on the field today. But like there's so many like young superstars in the game right now, but like none of them are really pitchers. I guess it's like, there's been a lot of guys who have been taken down by injuries.
I wonder if that's it. If there's
like Sonny Gray, like a couple years ago, you'd be like, that guy's the next great like starter. Or like Chris Archer, like that guy's the next great starter. But they like have been injured or haven't put it together. And so you're left with like a pretty small handful of dudes. And then like a bunch of people who seem to come out of nowhere and like have a few amazing seasons and then flame out.
Yeah, that's what seems like it happens more often than... Because even like Zach Greinke, who is good, like isn't top tier anymore. He's not like an ace.
Greinke's an interesting one. Would you put him in the Hall of Fame like if he had, I don't know, four more good years?
Like what? Like good like he's having this year good? Or would it have to be like when he was in his...
Like 3 to 5 win seasons, I would say. Like not no. Cy Young seasons, but like all-star seasons.
I think
all-star-ish.
I'm stingy with pitchers on the Hall of Fame. So I don't think I'd put Greinke. That's why I really only think right now, honestly, Kershaw is the only pitcher I would put in the Hall of Fame.
The other crazy thing is
pitchers.
Like Kershaw is maybe better than any of those guys.
Oh, yeah.
Like Randy Johnson, Greg Maddux, like Roger Clemens. Like he at least has the chance. He'll have to keep going for a little bit. But like season by season, like he's maybe the best pitcher that we've ever seen like in our lifetimes.
Yeah, definitely. I agree that he's definitely in the conversation of the Maddux, Clemens, Johnson.
Man, it's so fucked. I mean, him and Felix, like that Felix has never pitched in the playoffs. Yeah. Like, Sale's never pitched in the playoffs either, although he probably will in the next year or two. But the fact that, like, Kershaw keeps getting to the playoffs and, like, his team lets him down, or he has, like, one bad game and then they don't have any other starters, so they get knocked out. Sad.
And he has to always go on, like,
sad
3 days
exclamation point.
Sad.
No, don't ever say that.
We don't want to think of anything sad.
I've got a question pertaining to pitchers and injuries. So I watched the Angels game, Angels versus Mets, and they had this super young pitcher, Alex Meyer, who's 6'9" and, like, just crazy to watch. When he went up to bat, they said that, okay, when he went up to bat, they said that it was his first at-bat since high school. Yeah. I don't know if he's 18 years old or 19 years old, or if he went to college and didn't play, or, like, what does that mean? And also, he was so scared. Like, he was visibly shaking and just, like, holding it like he was about to bunt, just, like, shaking. And the Angels coach, what's his name?
Mike
Shosha.
It's
Mike Scherzer.
Just looked so nervous. And, like, he eventually struck out, but it was, like, such a load off of his shoulders. You could tell, like, all the tension was just like, oh man, is that, like, a common thing? Like, is he worried about getting beamed, or is he worried about, like, just throwing his shoulder out when he swings, or what? Why is he so nervous? Other than he's 18 and...
There's no way he's 18.
Okay.
He's probably, like, 23 or 24 at the... It could be, like, 22.
I think he's a little bit older than that.
I don't know this guy.
I think he used to pitch for the Twins, but he's still pretty young. Okay. But basically, yeah, he probably got drafted out of high school, was in the American League for his entire, like, minor league career, like, for an American League team.
Yeah.
So they have DH all the way up. Mm-hmm. And then, like, had never pitched in a National League park for interleague play before. So he just, like, literally never had the opportunity. He probably did batting practice in spring training. I think they make all the pitchers do that. But
yeah.
I could definitely understand. I don't know who was pitching for the Mets that day, but, like, if I had never, like, taken in a bat and then I stand in against Syndergaard or something like that.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
I guess, is he hurt right now?
I think so. But it could have still been DeGrom. Or,
yeah,
like,
somebody
still...
who throws, like, 98 miles an hour, and you're just like, yeah. I would pee myself,
like,
probably.
He's like, he's probably, he's definitely better than me, but he's closer to me at hitting than he is to an actual major league hitter.
Right.
So it's like, you know, like, as scared as I would also be, even if I was like, they're definitely not going to beat me, I'd be like, this everything about this sucks.
Wait, Joe, I have a question for you. Did you say beamed?
Like, beamed. Like,
like a laser beam?
Is it beamed?
It's beamed.
Yeah, it's beamed.
Okay. I learned
like
something every day.
Yeah. Sorry to call you out. No. But yeah, it's beamed. I don't know why.
Beamed makes way less sense than beamed, right?
I'd say they both make very little
here's
sense.
Here's what I want.
I've gotten hit by way more lasers than I have beans.
Did they have the word beam with an M in, like, the late 19th century?
I don't know.
Sunbeams?
Probably.
Yeah.
Maybe they might not even have the word might have been just...
Bean might have been the only word they had back then.
The only word that they needed. Like,
and the players with beans. Beans versus the beans.
He beamed it over to Bean. Bean!
He's just eating beans. We'll call this a bean.
Well, I think we should probably get into the rest of the show, yeah?
Yeah.
Because it's a dang good one.
It's very good.
I gotta say, I know I'm biased, but...
Very biased.
It's being very biased. Good.
I'm going to say I'm so excited because I'm pretending that we didn't previously record the other segments.
Yeah.
Well, that's how I know that they're good. To break the illusion for a second, we already recorded them. They're good.
They're great.
They're good.
They're really good.
We had a lot of fun.
Yeah. So stick around. We'll be right back with Jeff Johnson, Kansas City Jumbotron operator. And then in the second half, we'll be here with Mitch Huckweed, Seattle weirdo. One last thing before we go to break is we should give a shout out to Boardwalk Audio, who is hosting our podcast and many other great ones. You can support Boardwalk and Duck Snort by visiting boardwalkaudio.com/DuckSnort, whew, and clicking the support our artists link. That'll take you to Amazon, shop like you normally would, and we'll get a little bit of a percentage. Doesn't cost you anything extra, but helps keep the podcast going. So now that I got that out.
It was a mouthful.
Yeah, it was a mouthful. I kind of panicked.
You did okay. You were like, what was his name? Alex Meyer. You were like Alex Meyer at the plate.
I was steering down that 98 mile per hour Boardwalk Audio promo. I just couldn't handle it. anywho, now, for real, we'll be right back. That's terrible.
All right, and we are back with Duck Snore.
Duck Snore.
Duck Snore. And we're very excited because we have Jeff Johnson, who is the former director of the Kauffman Stadium Jumbotron in Kansas City, the Royals Jumbotron.
Thanks for being here, Jeff.
My pleasure. Happy to join you guys.
I wanted to have you on because I think that it's such a cool. You never think about that as like a job someone has, but it's such a cool job to be able. Everyone knows the Jumbotron, right?
Exactly. And I was the director there from 1997 to 2000. So it's been a few years since my time in Kansas City. I still direct and produce video board programming and that sort of thing for Iowa State now. But my time in Kansas City was like you say, the dream job for me. I grew up in a small town, Shenandoah, Iowa, and back then, you know, about all we could hear on the radio were the Kansas City Royals, and so getting the chance to one day work every day in the stadium, basically sitting there watching baseball, 81 games a year was fantastic.
Yeah, that's so you grew up listening to Denny on KMA, I take it, right?
That's right, Denny Matthews and Fred White on your friend in the Great Midwest, KMA Radio in Shenandoah, Iowa.
Go ahead.
As a high school junior and senior, I worked at KMA Radio, so that was another dream job for me as a kid growing up.
I should say that Jeff and I are from the same hometown, Shenandoah, Iowa, and I also in high school worked for KMA.
Whoa, how come you never,
world.
How come
you
never
you
ran
impressed?
A Jumbotron? Oh, I'm very impressed.
KMA is, they got the Everly Brothers started, so they're a big deal.
That's right. That's so how did, the same.
So, Jeff, how did you go from, you know, starting out in sports radio, I guess? I imagine that was your first entree into the sports world. How did you end up at Kauffman Stadium?
That's a good question. So I did start in radio, attended Iowa State, where I got a journalism and mass communication degree, worked in both radio and television, primarily for the CBS affiliate in Des Moines for 10 years as a weekend sports anchor and weekday sports reporter. After 10 years of working a lot of nights and a lot of weekends and missing a lot of things, my wife and I took the opportunity to move to the Kansas City area because of a job opportunity for her. So that left me wondering, okay, what am I qualified to do?
We know that question very well in Los Angeles, don't worry.
Right. And, you know, none of the local stations in Kansas City were hiring at the time, so you know, I looked into several different things, you know, and in finance and other areas where I had interest, but nothing ever sparked the enthusiasm like covering sporting events always had. So I'm sitting in our living room one day and I'm watching the Royals pregame show on television, and I noticed at the end of the broadcast that the show was produced by a local company called Creative Communications. And I jotted that down and did a little research, you know, as much research as you could in 1996. I opened up my Britannica encyclopedia. And so I made a phone call or two and connected, explained to the company president, whose name is Mickey Larson. I explained to him my background, what I was doing in Kansas City, and said, you know, would sure love the opportunity to come and work for, you know, anything you guys need, was kind of my approach. And initially I started as a camera operator at the stadium, and then moved into the control room doing, what they call still store graphics. And then eventually moved into the director's chair, for 3 years. And just, like I said, dream come true. The ability to watch Major League Baseball and to do it for, you know, the team I grew up rooting for was just wonderful.
Yeah, that's an amazing story. I've always been curious, I guess, like what it's like to watch a game sort of from the camera position as well.
Yeah, and I still do some of that work as well. Really with all of those positions, whether you're running a camera or directing or producing or doing replay, you know, your mind is so focused on what your responsibility is that you oftentimes don't get kind of sucked into the drama on the field. To this day, I work as a producer and director for Iowa State University, doing their football and basketball games for the in-stadium and in-arena video boards. And, you know, there'll be nights when I get home and my wife says, that was fantastic, those final 3 minutes, and, you know, what the score was. And there's just moments that I was so focused on what my responsibility was that sometimes you feel like you're separated from the action, but never so far separated that you don't enjoy it and appreciate the job that you have.
So are you still a pretty big sports fan now, or does the job make you have to compartmentalize that, or do you follow sports outside of work?
No, I remain a very big sports fan. Since leaving my job as a sports reporter and anchor with KCCI Television in Des Moines, I haven't had to follow everything as closely. And so as a result, I find myself knowing a lot about a lot of different sports, but not quite the details that I did when I was working in that role. And that's, you know, that's one of the benefits of the work I do now as a director and producer is I arrive for pregame. We do a lot of our pre-production. I work the game. We turn everything off and you head home. And you don't worry so much about outcomes and getting back to the studio to put together the sports casts and the reports and all those sorts of things. It's really been a good fit for me ever since finding my way into the control room at Kauffman Stadium.
Yeah, that really sounds like it makes your day shorter.
I feel badly for those folks who might be sitting in a cubicle watching the clock all day, and you know, there's never a day like that for me. It's the clock I'm watching is the scoreboard and the seconds counting down there.
So how much has the job changed, I guess, since you started? Because I'd imagine, I know that certainly Jumbotrons have gotten a lot bigger, and I think that the graphics have become a lot more elaborate and stuff. So how does that affect the amount of work that you have to do, and how does that, do you think, improve the experience for the audience?
Yeah, that's a great point, because I think, obviously, there's been technological changes. I mean, the video screens are high definition now. There are more cameras, more access, and sharing that goes on between an in-stadium production and the broadcast truck. And so now, for example, if you go to a game at Kauffman Stadium or really any stadium in the country, what you're seeing on the video board is often shared video feeds from the broadcast trucks. Because I really think the fans have that expectation that, you know, if I'm sitting there in my seat, I want to be able to see that close play sliding into third, or, you know, was that guy tagged out when the runner or when the first baseman was pulled off of first? You you want to see that. And I think the expectation now from years of watching games on television is that the fans sitting in the stadium, they want to be able to see that. And now the technology gives them that opportunity. The other thing that's really changed, is the amount of sponsorship and money, for lack of a better word, that goes into the productions and the money that's being spent to advertise through the screens and the ribbon boards that you see circling the stadiums. And, you know, it used to be when I would work an Iowa State game in the early years up there that, you know, the band played whenever it wanted to, the PA announcer said whatever he wanted to, and we put replays up on the screen. Well, that's all changed because the sponsorship money dictates that, you know, this announcement needs to be made at a certain time, and this video needs to play, and this promotion needs to be done. And so my role at Iowa State now for football and basketball is to kind of coordinate everything that the fans kind of see and hear during the game, so that it's I describe it as like I'm a traffic cop that kind of lets one person go and then the video board and then the band, and it's all very very orchestrated.
But at the same time, for the kiss cam.
Yeah, for the kiss cam, exactly. It allows the flexibility of being able to react to things that are happening, you know, during the game as well. So it's a good balance.
I have a question about bringing up replays. I think this is true at Dodgers. This is anecdotal, but from going to Dodgers games, I don't remember what it was like in Kansas City. It seems like if the Dodgers make a great play, you'll see it on the board a bunch. But if the opposing team makes a great play, you might not even see a replay at all, unless it's truly amazing. Is that just me misreading it, or was that a thing when you were in Kansas City that you definitely leaned more into the hometown team getting extra love?
Yeah, I think it probably varies a little from stadium to stadium, but most of the places that I've worked, we've favored the home team. You know, it's just really hard to put up fantastic things that the visiting team is doing up on your video screen. And that's not to say that we don't do that from time to time, because oftentimes over the years, especially in football, coaching staffs like to see every play on the screen because they will sometimes use it as a coaching tool. And so even though a play, you know, went south for the home team, it gives them a chance to look up at the screen and watch, you know, who missed that play, or where was that linebacker supposed to be, those sorts of things. So we try to favor the home team as much as possible, but not exclusively. And then, you know, the other thing that's changed quite a bit is what they will allow you to show. When I was working at Kauffman Stadium, there was a two-page letter that was on the wall of our control room that gave very specific rules about what we could show and what we couldn't show. For example, you were never allowed to show a replay of a double play that originated at second base. And that, I'm assuming, was because they didn't want to expose the phantom double play where the second baseman or shortstop would slide across the bag and then make the catch and then throw.
Whoa,
clearly off the bag.
That's fascinating.
Which has changed completely now. I mean, another example is we were never allowed to show for either team a called third strike.
Wow.
Because there was always that feeling that you're basically exposing the umpire to the critique of the fans on where he made that call for a third strike. So those are just a couple of examples that I'm guessing have probably gone away from most control rooms, because our philosophy for Iowa State now is we'll show whatever we want, and we'll show it two or three times from different angles, and then we move on. So that's definitely a change.
I'm going to be looking for that called Third Strike thing at games I go to now because I can't remember scene called Third Strikes. I wonder if that's still true. I also wonder
how much like the advent of like actual instant replay in baseball has and football, I guess, has changed what you know they're allowed to show and what not.
Yeah.
Oh, significantly. In fact, one of the things that we're allowed to do now is when, let's say, play stops in a football game and the referee announces that the play is under review, we actually have a feed now in our video control room of what the referees are looking at, and we can put that feed up on the screens.
And so
you see them kind of toggling back and forth, and, you know, was that foot in bounds, or, you know, was that a catch? So there's this transparency in what the officials are actually reviewing, and the fans get a front row seat for that now.
So how much of this stuff can be scripted in advance, I guess? Because, you know, obviously a sport, like any sporting event, is unpredictable, but you said there's so many, you know, ad inserts that you have to do, and obviously the more fun segments for fans and stuff like that. How do you plan it all out ahead of time?
Yeah, that's a good question. For baseball, of course, it's very organized with, you know, every half inning, and you've got your set amount of time between innings that you can run different promotions. For football, we schedule everything based on called timeouts and quarter breaks and halftime. Where I think you get the most flexibility and the opportunity to kind of manipulate the fans, for lack of a better phrase, but is college basketball. Because, you know, we're scripted when there's timeouts, you know, under 16 minutes and under 12 and under 8 and under 4. But anything that happens outside of that, let's say the home team makes a run, Hilton Coliseum is going crazy, the visiting coach calls timeout. I've got a list of songs on our music playlist, and I will literally be yelling them on headset because no one can hear each other. It's just deafening in there. And at times I'm standing. And the beauty about basketball is that I'm seated in the arena, so I'm feeling the arena just like the fans are, and I'm pointing at someone to, you know, go with music on the laptop, and we keep the crowd, you know, kind of at a fevered pitch all the way into, you know, throughout the timeout. And I'd say that's the biggest opportunity to kind of make things happen spontaneously, and you really have some flexibility there, whereas the scheduled timeouts and the quarter breaks for women and those sorts of things are all very orchestrated and scripted by the marketing departments.
So what's your go-to pump-up song?
Well, you know, I'm kind of a Sandstorm guy.
I love Sandstorm. That's a great answer.
That's a classic.
Yeah.
It's funny, you know, every year we kind of look at our list and we think, are they tired of this yet? I think the Jock Jam stuff has kind of run its course.
Sure, that's devastating to hear.
Waylon's crushed right now.
But there's Party Rock and We Found Love. There's some really great instrumental stuff that, you know, every year we review what we have and we decide, you know what, as long as they keep responding to this, we're going to keep using it. And I think people kind of expect certain songs at certain places when the team is making a run. So it's fun, but we're always open to new ideas. And of course, one of the nice things about working at a university is you've got this influx of students every year, and there's marketing interns and production interns, and they're constantly saying, hey, old Mr. Johnson, have you considered something off of this CD? You know, so it's good to have their input and keep it fresh.
Keeps you young.
That's right.
So kind of on that note, I'm curious what your favorite like segments are to put up. Like, are you a Kiss Cam guy? Are you like, do you like to get the fans dancing? Like, are you, do you like the races, like the, you know, hot dog races or whatever?
Yeah, I would say my favorite is those spontaneous moments when the crowd is just on its feet and into the action. And, you know, you play one of those songs like Sandstorm and it's just a minute 30 of pandemonium. I mean, and you can just sit back and go, this is just crazy. The one interesting story about Kiss Cam and things that you can do with a crowd.
Here we go. excited.
We found out the hard way that, when you work with a, let's say a fan base like for the Kansas City Royals, and these are paying customers, and we would, from time to time, we would put up things that might kind of poke fun at the fans, and you could get away with that stuff because the worst thing that could happen is that somebody could be offended and say they're never coming to another Royals game, and in the big scheme of things, that didn't really matter, and people were entertained. We were never mean or cruel, but sometimes they just didn't get the joke. Like I've been to a game recently in Kansas City, and I think they have what they call Oblivious Cam now. And what they do is they put up Oblivious Cam on fans that aren't paying attention, and then the clock counts the number of seconds before they realize they're on the video board. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
But where it went wrong for us many years ago at Iowa State was, in fact, Kiss Cam. And we put several couples up on the board, and one couple didn't want any part of it. And after the game, the gentleman made his feelings known that he didn't want any part of it. And because he was a booster, he threatened to never donate another dime to the university. So you have a very different fan base that you have to be careful with college athletics, whereas with professional sports, you know, it's kind of like everybody's an open target.
Yeah, I never thought about that. That's very interesting. I don't know if you were there for this part, but and maybe already kind of answered this question, but I once said, I was at Kauffman Stadium, I think it was probably opening day, and there was a failed marriage proposal on the Jumbotron. I don't know if you've ever seen anything like that, or like what's the thing that kind of came up and you that was the most unexpected or kind of the worst case scenario for you?
Oh, man. I've gotten kind of skeptical of some of that stuff over the years because I feel like a lot of it is staged.
Oh, interesting. I was wondering that. I was wondering how much in general is staged.
Yeah, I think some organizations have done that where basically they get attractive young woman from the marketing department, attractive young man, and they place them in the stadium, and then he proposes and she pretends as though she has no interest, and it you know, gets a big laugh. However, I would say there have probably been moments that were you know, genuinely marriage proposals that went south. I can't think of anything off the top of my head that went wrong like that. Where my mind went on your question was a piece that we did in Kansas City that was really kind of unexpectedly popular, if that's the way to say it. there was one night when, and remember, this was the late 90s, so the Royals were losing a lot of games, and so we had to find ways to keep the crowd entertained.
Oh, I remember.
Well, one night we found a guy sitting in the stadium that looked like Sonny Bono, and we all kind of laughed about, wow, that guy looks like the late Sonny Bono. Well, two nights later, we come across a woman that we all think looks like Cher. So we saved the video of our Sonny lookalike. We recorded some video of our Cher lookalike, and we put together a split screen video and played their classic, I Got You, Babe. And it was a fantastic piece because we would play the video, we would play the song, you know, a baseball crowd kind of laid back, and then we'd put up different couples on the screen. And it was a little bit of a form of kiss cam, but at the same time, it was just kind of like, I got you, babe, and there's Sonny and Cher, and everybody had a good laugh. So
that's great.
That sounds really cool. That's great.
Yeah, that was a good ending. I'm sorry I don't have any real bad endings for
no,
you.
No, it's actually probably good that you don't.
Yeah, it's much better for the good people of Kansas City, at least.
That's right. The worst, I would share with you, the worst situations for us, and really for any baseball production, is the rain delay.
Oh, yeah.
Because your challenge is, we don't know if this is 20 minutes or 2 hours and 20 minutes. And so we've got to do our best to keep the fans that are sitting in the rain engaged and not leaving the ballpark. Because, you know, the home team wants those folks to stay here and buy coffee and hot dogs and popcorn and everything else and stick around as, you know, as long as they can for baseball. But there were nights when, you know, we would do Kaufman karaoke, and we would do, you know, This Week in Baseball for the next hour on the video board, and anything we could do to kind of keep fans at least somewhat engaged. The very worst was a power outage at the ballpark that affected about half of the stadium lights.
Whoa.
And, you know, it wasn't raining, so everybody stayed in their seats, but they couldn't play baseball. And so after about a 2 hour delay and us trying to think of every possible song we could play and video we could show, they got back to baseball, and that was a good thing.
Yeah, that's a long time.
Sounds like you're an unsung hero.
We're very short on time, but I have to ask, did you ever get to meet George Brett?
I did. My biggest fear growing up a George Brett fan was that he might not treat me well, and he could not have been nicer when I was introduced to him. In fact, we were able to shoot several different commercials with him, and I don't feel as though I knew him, but being able to hang around and a person like that and someone you'd admired for a long time was another dream come true for me.
Yeah, sounds awesome.
So happy to hear he was nice. Maybe we'll have you back on just to tell George Brett stories, because I love him.
Well, I don't have many, but yeah, he was a good guy to me, that's for sure.
We're out of time. We have to move on to our next guest. But Jeff, we really appreciate this. This was really
thanks
great.
For coming on.
You bet. I'm happy to do it, guys.
And if you're ever
your show and I'll be happy to join you anytime.
Oh, awesome! And if any listeners are out there ever in Ames, Iowa, go check out a football or a basketball game and check out Jeff's work.
That's right.
Cyclones.
Go Cyclones.
Yeah, go. Yeah. I can't say that because I'm a Hawkeyes fan, but I'll let you guys
Ooh.
Say it.
Well, don't tell anyone I have a daughter that's at the University of Iowa. So.
Oh no! Okay.
I'm a fan of both.
Great.
All right.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff.
And we'll be right back with more Duck Snort.
All right, welcome back to Duck Snort. Duck Snort. Great conversation with Jeff Johnson, the Jumbotron. Jeff Jumbotron Johnson. Hope he's okay with that. But now we're here with a very special guest. We like to find people that are related to baseball, have some unique perspectives. And we're here with Mitch Huckweed.
Yeah, man.
Hey, Mitch.
To be on the pod, man. Good to be anywhere these days. You know what I'm talking about?
Not really.
You don't know what I'm talking about?
No, not really.
I just mean it's good to see people.
Oh, okay.
Good to talk to people. You know what I'm talking about.
All right. I guess so.
Yeah.
I can agree with that.
Cool.
So, Mitch, if you're probably familiar with him if you're from the Seattle area because
you know me. If you're from Seattle, you know me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's been busking outside Mariners games for 20 years.
20 years.
Wow. Yeah. You look great. Right.
You do look great.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I'm a spry. They say 60 is the new 50, but I'm a spry 65.
Okay.
So what does that make me? You tell me. You
know, 55.
You
know what
I'm 55. About. 55.
Yeah, 55. Basically about 55. So feeling good. Yeah. Been busking out for 20 years. You know, I'm a bit of a staple outside the Safeco Field there at Mariners games. You know, so I'm a lifelong fan of the club, and I like to pump up the crowds on the way into the club. You
that's
know?
Awesome.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, that's
I love seeing the buskers on the way.
I do
into
too.
They're cool,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
People
very
like
cool.
Interacting yeah. with them.
Gets
you, know?
You in the vibe of going to a baseball game and stuff.
Exactly.
What do you play?
Well, that's a great question. I play music for
cool.
the people as they're walking in all kinds. Basically, what I do is I have a Sony, I guess you'd call it a ghetto blaster. It's a large boombox, you know, one of those
yeah.
big suckers. And I just kind of put that on the curb in front of me right outside Safeco Field, beautiful Safeco Field in downtown Seattle, Washington. And I'll just pop a cassette in there play people the music they want to hear coming in the ballpark and put out my hat and get a little dough. So that's the bus guy
I
do.
You just put a cassette in a boombox
and right.
press play?
Yeah, man. I mean, everyone says it like that, and I don't know why.
Is it your music? Is it your music that you've created?
Well, I like to think so, yes, because, you know, I was one of the original members of Mudhoney. I don't know if you, know, if you guys are familiar with the band Mudhoney.
I've heard of
Mudhoney.
Part of the grunge movement of the
early 90s. Part of the grunge
90s.
Movement. So was I, man. I was right in there in the grunge movement, you know. And,
wow.
and what happened was I dropped out of high school at Garfield High School in Seattle, Washington. I was like, I got to get in this music scene. I started hanging around outside of shows. And Mudhoney started playing shows, and I was hanging out at almost all of their shows. And I would come up to them afterwards, and you know their famous song, Touch Me, I'm Sick?
I don't know that one.
You guys don't know Mudhoney's hit,
no,
Touch Me, I'm Sick?
No, I don't know.
Well, it's a real song they had, and it's based on something I would say to them after shows.
You would say to Mudhoney, Touch Me, I'm Sick?
Yeah, I would come up to the stage where I'd be like, you guys rock, Touch Me, I'm Sick, when's your next show?
How did they respond to that?
They didn't like it. But I, you know, I said it for two reasons. One, I wanted their touch. And two, I was sick.
You said you saw them for years. You were sick for years.
Sick for years. Couldn't shake a series of flus.
Was it a warning to them?
It was.
Okay.
That's what's so amazing about that is, and I think why they grabbed it as a lyric is it's normally you would want to say don't touch me, I'm sick, right? Presumably that would be the
right.
logic,
that's
right?
The thing people
but no,
say.
Man, I flipped it.
I don't know
I flipped
if amazing
it
is the word.
I think it is. And see, look, I flipped it, and I'm saying to them, honestly, what I really wanted from Mudhoney was to build up their antibodies. You know, like to me, they were like babies. They were babies on the rock scene, and I'd been around a little bit already, you know? And so I was like,
you're trying to protect them.
I was trying to say, hey, I got all the street diseases you could get at Pioneer Square in beautiful downtown
street
Seattle.
Street diseases?
Street diseases. Man.
Like
yeah,
what?
Yeah. Street diseases, well, you could pick them up off a pigeon. Or in Seattle's case, off a bad piece of salmon or cod that's fallen off a ship of some kind.
If someone threw it at you?
Yeah, if someone throws a piece of beautiful Ivers breaded halibut, you know, they throw it to you like, get away from me. Stop yelling that you're sick. And then that's your food to eat. You know, I would eat that, and that would give me a street disease if it fell in the gutter before I picked it up.
I'm sorry. I'm confused about something. You
yeah,
said you
man.
Were a member of Mudhoney?
Yeah, I was a member of Mudhoney. Well, in the sense that I was at every show for 5 or 6 years. I contributed one of their main lyrics, so I think that makes me like a songwriter founding member in
a lot of
ways.
I feel like you should get credit for that.
And this is what I'm saying. I haven't gotten a single residual check, and not just because I don't have a permanent address.
Well, do you think they might be pissed off that you're... Like, they're not getting royalties from you playing their music outside of the baseball game?
Well, okay.
You're playing Mudhoney music?
I'm playing a lot of Mudhoney. And I'm saying, I came up with this. What I do is I play Mudhoney really loud. And I go, I shout at people, go Mariners, I came up with this. and they like it all right. But yeah, you know, if they're pissed at me because they don't get my, you know, what, 10% of the $35 I make as people walk into a Mariners game, and you know, fuck them, man. Hey, I don't mean to get hot, but come on, Mudhoney.
Oh. Okay, let's rewind things just a little bit because things are getting heated.
Things are getting hot.
Yeah. In the literal sense, you're sweating, a lot, which makes me think you're still sick.
Yeah, are you still sick?
I, you know, at this point, sick is normal. You know what I mean? So it's not that I am sick. It's that what is sick? You know, maybe you guys are sick with your perfect blood pressure and your hair. You know what I mean?
I actually really don't have a lot of hair.
Sorry, Waylon, of course, not that much hair. So that's the difference there. But no,
So you you play music outside of Safeco Field.
That's right.
This isn't the traditional definition of busking because you're actually
What makes you say that?
Well, just going by the pure dictionary definition of it, it would be that you're performing music, right, which you're not doing. You're sort of, if I'm being generous, you're DJing. What? Outside.
Wow, like I'm some kind of millennial, okay? Like I'm part of the gig economy.
I would never confuse you for a millennial.
Well, good, because I'm not. And I do perform. I put on a show, you know.
What else is involved
is me wearing my authentic 1998 Alex Rodriguez Mariners jersey, which helps set
Is that
tone.
Still popular?
Very popular. Yeah, people love it. Well, a lot of people in Seattle turned on him when he took a $50 million signing bonus to go to the Rangers. But to me, that only solidified him as a hero in my heart. What would you guys do for $50 million? Would you betray your legacy and move across the country? I would.
I probably would
as
well.
I would have definitely played for the Rangers for $50 million.
Come on, man. So, yeah, so I wear the A-Rod jersey. I kind of dance around in some, you know, traditional busking dances, some classic grunge slam dancing from the 90s. I kind of slam dance around my own boombox, and I yell at people, hey, I came up with this Go Ams. And so I think that is a performance, to slam dance alone.
So in the spirit of rewinding, at one point you mentioned you make $35.
$35 a game. If I'm lucky, man. You know what I mean?
How many hours are you out there?
I'm out there. Let's say it's like, what's a normal time for a game to start? 1:30?
7:10.
Afternoon.
Yeah, okay, great. What? Great. So let's say it's a Sunday afternoon game. I am there from 3 a.m. the night before, just staking out a spot because there's this one motherfucker who plays a tuba. All right, and he plays a tuba outside of every Mariners game, and he thinks he's a local institution. I got to make sure I get his spot. I try to get the best spot right at the end of the road there.
Are you talking about Tuba Man?
Yeah, I'm talking about Tuba Man.
Oh,
yeah.
He's supposed to be on the show in like a couple weeks.
Yeah. Shut your mouth.
No, for real.
Tuba Man's going to be on this show?
Yeah, we saw him on SportsCenter. He was like
on SportsCenter. Couldn't wait to get him, but he couldn't come in this week. And
ever since he'd been on SportsCenter, he wouldn't shut up about SportsCenter, man. He said, hey, you saw me on SportsCenter. I said, I don't have a TV. I heard about it. You know, because we got a busking community here, but it's like that's not why I busk, man. I busk for the music, for the grunge, man, to keep grunge alive and keep the Mariners alive.
How do people react to grunge these days in Seattle?
I think there's a deep love for it. I think it's very deep. A lot of people don't demonstrate it when they hear it. You know, when like they're hiding it really well. Kids are frowning at me and walking away. But I think it's because they know. It's like, this is too... If I stay here and listen to this, I'm going to cry, man. I mean, when I hear this, you know, when I hear Alice in Chains, man, these kids love Alice in Chains, man. They can't stop crying about
the
Alice
rooster,
in Chains.
The Rooster, the Man in the Box.
Yeah, classic Man in the Box, man. I mean, I'll play that.
Can I ask you, how did Chris Cornell's death affect you?
Oh, my God.
It's very sad.
It is very sad. Legitimately very sad. No, it's horrible, man. I mean, I tell you what I did. The game right afterwards, I played Soundgarden over and over again, pointed at my own face. I laid in the gutter and put the boombox pointed at my own face and listened to Soundgarden for 8 hours.
A lot of time to like
be laying in a gutter.
Yeah. Drain those double D batteries. How do you afford
batteries? The batteries, man. That's the toughest cue of it all. You know what I mean? Well, I'll give you the A is I steal batteries.
Oh, well, we can't condone that.
Okay. I didn't ask you to condone that. Okay, fine.
We're obligated to say we don't condone stealing.
I didn't even want to talk about it. This guy's asking me how I get my D batteries. I'll tell you. It's life on the street. I steal them. I don't live on the street. I live in a van that's parked on the street. But you know, hey, remember Chris Farley? Live in a van down by the river.
Classic. Yeah, remember that? More classic early 90s.
And that was when things were good, man. When Chris Farley was on SNL and Ken Griffey Jr. and Ken Griffey Sr. were hitting back-to-back father-son home runs.
I remember that.
What a time, man. Yeah. Oh, the Kingdom, huh? Remember that?
Never been.
Remember the Seattle Kingdom? One of the worst designed baseball parks in America, man. This place was so far
How so?
Out. Oh, it was just a big, ugly concrete dome. Just a beautiful construction south of Seattle that just looked kind of, you know, just like a giant concrete bubble.
I remember when they blew it up. Were you nearby when they blew it up?
That was my 9/11, man. when they self-imploded the Kingdom. That was 9/11. I'm watching the news, watching the skyline of Seattle, and one of its main institutions is crumbling, okay, is exploding, and I'm calling my family, making sure they're not inside. You know, they tell me no, they cleared everybody out, no one's even close to the Kingdom. And I'm like, thank God.
A little bit different from 9/11.
I don't think so.
Very different.
I really disagree with you. I think it was a lot like 9/11. And I'm not saying for everybody. Look, if you lived in New York, you should have tuned in to watch the implosion of the Kingdom. It was scheduled, and it was a national event. You know, I mean, Mark McGuire hit a lot of dingers in that place. You know, when he was coming through on the A's. True story, I went to the longest game in Kingdom history. Not longest in terms of innings, but longest in terms of just hours. It was about 6 hours long in a concrete dome, just pop flies for hours, man. That was it, man.
Wow. So you sound like you're a baseball fan. Then.
Big baseball fan, man. Well, I got to support the team, man. I'm outside the club. I got to get people pumped for the best players, man.
You ever make it inside these days?
You know, every once in a while, I get pretty close. Because I tell you, they got that retractable roof at Safeco. They got one of those roofs that goes all the way back. And it's kind of near a train depot also. So if you sleep in a train car at night, and then you wait for them to retract the roof for maintenance, you can shimmy up and get in the gears and kind of sort of nestle in the gears.
It's so dangerous.
It is, man. It is. Very few of us have done it. But, you know, we like to hang out up in the rafters above the roof. And so I've watched a couple warm-ups for some games, but they usually catch me before the game actually starts. So I've never actually seen a game in Safeco Field.
Are the other buskers, do they accept you or do they kind of see you as an outsider?
I think they know I'm too powerful.
I think they see me slam dancing.
They see me slam dancing, and they go, "This guy, look. Most of us, look. I'm some jerk who's got a guitar. All I got is a guitar. This guy's got a boombox, which provides guitar, bass, drums. You know, dancing and singing. All right, he's got every instrument covered at once.
That is a wider array of sounds.
It is. And so, what they'll often do is they'll wait for me outside of the beautiful Seattle Convention Center, right across the street from Safeco Field, and they'll just kind of wait for me to get off the bus, and they'll kind of surround me and shove me up against the wall. And they'll go, "Hey, get out of here, boombox boy." And I go, "Who are you to tell me what to do? You're carrying around a tuba, and you wield a piano here." There's a guy who wields a piano.
Oh, you're talking about
around.
Piano Man?
God damn.
Oh, man. Saw him on Baseball Tonight.
Yeah.
Baseball Tonight so had tough. Piano Man?
Yeah.
Which is just, if you ask me, if you're called Piano Man, you should be Elton John. No, Billy Joel. Yeah. Damn it. It should be Billy Joel or Elton John, a guy known for the piano. Like Liberace, not some guy on the street.
He's so good. If you know his number or anything, can you get it to us so we can get him on the show, please?
Yeah, I'll get. It's lucky him. He's got a phone. You know what I mean? Yeah, I'll give him your phone number. Jesus.
I have a question. I guess it's not baseball related, but
sure.
Since we're only 81 games.
Oh man.
A year. What do you do when the Mariners aren't in town or in the off season?
Well, it's tough. I like to linger outside the Experience Music Project.
Oh, I've been there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been there too.
Cool space that, you know, a lot of people think looked like looks terrible, but I think looks awesome.
I think it looks cool. I think it looks cool.
I legit think it looks cool.
Would you call it the Beautiful Experience Music Project?
Yeah, I would, man. I mean, it's Frank Gehry, for crying out loud. What are we turning our nose up at this? At Frank Gehry? Anyway, I sleep in some of the rafters at the Experience Music Project because it's sort of a big... If you've seen it, it's designed to look like a smash guitar, like the kind that I would steal out of Mudhoney's van and smash in the alley so that they had to talk to me. Yeah. So it's like that. So it reminds me of that. Yeah. I get to climb up inside because there's a lot of openings. And I live in the EMP and I come down in the middle of the... After every... It's sort of like you see Night at the Museum, man. It's kind of like Night at the Museum, but all the instruments come to life because I play them.
Oh, so you can play an instrument.
I mean, who can't? Who can't pick up a guitar and strum the... I'm not an idiot. I can strum my fingers across.
You can strum open strings.
Yeah. I can strum open strings. Beyond that, it's scary, and I haven't tried
scary.
It.
Scary?
Yeah, it's scary, man.
How so?
Well, you know, string will cut you. You know, in The Godfather, they strangled that guy with piano wire. And that's why I don't play the piano. Is because what if I get godfathered? What if Luca Brasi grabs the piano wire from inside the piano and chokes me to death inside the sound lab at the Experience Music Project? Then egg on my face.
Sounds like a pretty...
You don't think that could happen?
No, low
you don't think Luca Brasi could end up sneaking up on me at the Experience Music Project?
I also feel like playing the piano has nothing to do with him. If he wants to kill you with a piano wire, he's going to do it regardless if you're...
Look, I don't claim to know the motives of Luca Brasi's behavior, but if he wants me dead, he'll want me dead, and I'll be dead. Anyway, I'm also a big Seahawks fan. Love the Hawks. You know, but for me, it's all about those Mariners. I mean, you know, the Titans, you know, people like, you know, obviously Ken Griffey Jr. and Sr., right? You know,
Brett Boone,
one of my faves, because I used to sell him drugs. I would sell
steroids?
Him drugs. He thought they were steroids, but what they were was a mix of painkillers and feline medication, feline AIDS medication, man. Because one of the guys in Mudhoney, his cat had AIDS, feline AIDS.
And you stole his cat's medicine?
Yeah, well, I have a standing policy that until they pay me the residuals they get for Touch Me, I'm Sick, I will steal any medication that is mailed to their house. Because, you know, there's a very low percentage of medication is mailed to someone's house. So when I get my hands on that, I'm opening all their mail, period, you know.
Yikes.
Wow.
I'm very surprised that didn't kill Brett Boone dead.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was cool as hell because he was sort of the toast of the town, but I knew he was really shady and messed up. And that was the real Brett. I used to hold him as he cried in the clubhouse. He got me in the clubhouse a couple of times, and he was like, I'm a fraud. And I was like, I know.
Dark.
But what a fielder you are, man. You got that golden glove. Did he get a golden glove?
I don't know.
I don't know. He made a couple of All-Star teams.
He certainly did.
2001 was he started the All-Star team in 2001.
Yeah, man. And that would have been 2001. That wasn't that the season the Mariners had 116 wins.
It was.
Sure was.
Ichiro's rookie year.
The best.
What's Ichiro like? You ever meet Ichiro?
Ichiro is from another country. Yeah, so that's what I noticed about him first.
Knew that part.
Yeah, that's kind of what I clocked first, was like, hey, you're not from around here, are you, kid? And people were saying, don't ask him that. That's a very rude thing to ask him in his first year in his ballpark. But he's cool as a cucumber, man. Every time I scream at him, hey, touch me, I'm sick, he would just walk right
past. So that's still your catchphrase?
Yeah. Well, I got to get paid. I got to get the word out that I'm the touch me, I'm sick guy. But he didn't give me much time a day. But every once in a while, you know, I like to think he does this special thing that I think is a salute to me. Because I always wear my A-Rod jersey's pretty itchy, right? So I'm always kind of tugging at the sleeve and sort of scratching it. And so whenever he goes up to bat, he would kind of aim the bat out towards the pitcher, and he would line up and he would tug on his sleeve. And I knew, watching, I was like, that's a signal to me specifically. He's letting me know, kind of like Carol Burnett tugging on her ear for a grandma. Ichiro's tugging on his sleeve to let Mitch Hucweed know, hey, I know you're sick, and I'll touch you someday.
Are you a big Carol Burnett fan?
Love Carol Burnett, man. Okay, come on, man. She was huge for grunge heads.
What?
Yeah, grunge heads love Carol Burnett, man.
Wow.
Because she pushed the envelope. She pushed the envelope, and she was the original kind of post-punk rock. She and Tim Conway didn't give a damn. They were doing whatever they wanted, cracking up during their own sketches, tugging on their earlobes, a woman hosting late night. I mean, none of it made sense, you know? So, yeah, love Carol. She's great.
I love Carol Burnett.
Who doesn't?
I love her.
I'd love to busk outside her house. You know what I mean?
Please don't. Yeah, don't. I think you'll get in serious trouble if you do that. Yeah.
I think Carol would get it. Carol probably likes Mudhoney or Alice in Chains or Soundgarden. You know?
Did they model John Cusack's character in that one movie off of you?
Because
I noticed
movie
you have like the same. What is that movie where he holds up the boombox?
Oh, Say Anything.
Yeah,
I think so because guess where that movie takes place? Seattle, Washington.
Oh, wow,
it's true, man. And so I like to think because I was sleeping in a trench coat for basically the entire decade of the 80s.
That would have been pre-grunge, though.
It was pre-grunge, and that's why he's playing Peter Gabriel.
Yeah,
that's why he's playing Peter Gabriel, because he didn't have the sweet strains of Touch Me, I'm Sick.
So what did you do? Is that what you played on your boombox before grunge?
I was going around playing exclusively Peter Gabriel, holding that up outside of Mariners games at the Kingdom.
Wow.
And I think what happened was that the dad from Frasier, who is also the dad in Say Anything, was on location because of Frasier and went to a Mariners game because he's a sports guy. Martin Crane, obviously, he loves local Seattle sports. And I think he was, you know, studying that character.
Played the manager of the Black Sox in 8 Men Out.
See, this guy is crazy about baseball. So he probably came to a Mariners game in the Kingdom, saw me busking outside, and was like, this guy should be the basis of a feature film. And that's why Martin Crane wrote Say Anything and got it produced and shot.
It all adds
it's
up.
It's for me.
It
man.
All adds up.
I know,
you're crazy. Way more influential than me.
I know, and yet I get no residuals from Say Anything. Anytime In Your Eyes plays, I feel like I should get a residual off that based off the soundtrack of the film Say Anything, which I co-wrote. You know, I think that's enough to get a co-writer credit.
Well, we are in Los Angeles. Maybe somebody will hear it who's connected to a studio.
Hey, if you guys know anyone in the music industry, I would love to sing at them. You know,
I don't, but I'll be on the lookout.
Yeah,
I swear that to you, Mitch.
Well, maybe I should get in touch with these Dodgers, man. These wonderful L.A. Dodgers at beautiful Dodger Stadium in Chavez Ravine.
Go slam dance outside sometime.
Well, I can't because they're National League, right? So it's fair game to root for them, right?
Yeah.
I don't have to worry about crossover. They're not the Wicked Angels. You know what I mean, man? These guys are gross.
Well, listen, Mitch, we're about out of time.
Oh,
but,
I'm good. I'm glad we went out on me trashing the Angels.
That's great. We were talking earlier about how we went to an Angels game this week.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I pity you with that disgusting park with the giant. They're the ones with the giant Coke bottle in the edge, or is that
the
Giants?
The Giants.
All California ballparks are gross. What's in the outfield of the Angel Stadium? Isn't there some
Sherman Williams paint bucket?
Sherwin Williams.
There's a bunch of rocks as well.
That's what
like
I'm
a
thinking
waterfall.
Of. The
and
rock
a big
pad.
A.
I would love to live in the waterfall in those rock outcrops. You know, like as much as I hate the Angels, I'd happily live inside of their stadium just because I can't live anywhere else.
Just because you need a place to live.
Yeah, man. And, you know, come up to Seattle anytime you guys want. Come to Pike Place Market. I'll steal some fish for you by grabbing it out of the air when they throw it. And we can eat it in the alley right by the...
No, I don't want any street diseases.
You don't? No, man. Hey, get up your antibodies. I'd love to get up the antibodies of all you guys hosting this show, man. So... Thanks for having me, you know, and I'm just glad you. Hey, you come by and listen to me busk anytime, man.
Would love to. Yeah, would love to
Seattle,
take you up
we'll,
on that.
Well, after we listen to Tuba Man and Piano Man, we'll maybe swing.
Third
by.
Stop.
God damn it! You don't know. Don't listen to them at all. Okay, I'm the only one worth a damn on that whole street.
All right. Don't get riled.
Okay.
Well, we do want to thank everybody for listening to Duck Snort this week. We want to promote a show of a friend of the podcast, completely unrelated to this. Devin Fields, very funny. Comedian.
Yeah, he's a funny guy.
He's very funny. Oh, you know him?
Yeah,
he's from
yeah.
Seattle, I think.
Yeah, man. That's how I know all comedians from Seattle. I know him and Jeff Dye and
Ron Funches.
Ron Funches is grew up in Seattle? Chicago and then moved to Portland. So close.
So I was
enough.
Way off. I was way off.
Ian Carmel also from Portland. We know all Portland comedians, baby.
Yeah. Well, go see Devin's show at UCB Franklin on Friday, May 26th. It's a bit show about.
It's about another
Twin
great
Peaks?
Northwest. Series Twin Peaks. I mean, does it get more Northwest than a show about cops losing their minds in the woods and slow dancing to Roy Orbison music? You know,
I mean,
that's David Lynch's vision, man. You know what? And when that series comes out, I'm gonna play on my boombox. I'm gonna play the Twin Peaks theme and slam dance into the wall of Safeco Field.
Cool. All right.
Sounds incredible. Yeah. Cool, Can't wait to check it out.
Great. Great.
Also, do follow us on Twitter and Instagram at DuckSnortPod. Follow Devin on Twitter at ThatDevinField.
Do it. It'll be, he's at ThatDevinField. I'm a huge proponent of ThatDevinField. That's him on Twitter and Instagram. I mean, I check that out for all your Seattle comedy needs.
Also, big thanks to Jeff Johnson for joining us again. That was a great conversation. Leave reviews and subscribe in the iTunes store. Anything else? Oh, thanks to Moon Bounce and All Boy, All Girl for providing us with that sweet, sweet transition music. So you should slam dance to them sometime.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, they're
great. I mean, are they grunge?
Ish.
Ish. What does that mean? Like,
not grunge.
Modest Mouse or something? Another Seattle band.
All right, we got to get out of here.
Okay.
Mitch is making himself too comfortable in the studio. I think he wants to live in the rafters.
I'd love to. Hey, you got some sweet rafters here now. You mentioned it.
Thank you all so much for listening. Check us out next week for more Duck Snort.
Boardwalk Audio Podcast. For more information and shows, visit boardwalkaudio.com. Don't forget to rate and subscribe now.